So yeah, thanks for taking over the afternoon.
I
It's
was
made our job very
honored.
easy.
Really honored. When we ran into each other in the street, I was like, oh, me? Like looking behind me, like, you mean me?
And also that you guys live upstairs kind of makes this surprisingly easy.
I kept
Everything's
peeking
very
in.
seamless.
At first, I thought it was a prank. I was like, wait, what is going on? Did
Sucking
Hugh
them in.
Photoshop this? And then it was funny because Hugh always makes a joke that someone is in our apartment when we're not there. So then finally, yeah, it is kind of a creepy joke. And then finally, he was like, it's Dong. He's the one that comes into our
I
apartment.
need somewhere to. Why do you think I started this project?
I was like, I think there was like dirt in the shower one day, or I don't know what started it. And we were like, wait, is like someone coming up from East Broadway?
Actually, Hughes told me some of the better ghost stories that I've heard.
He
At
is,
the apartment?
yeah. Well,
well Louisiana was a big one.
Yeah, we went to New Orleans for my 30th. And Hugh got punched in the throat by a ghost.
What?
Yeah.
After hearing it run up and down the in the floor in
so
the attic,
the
right?
Airbnb had no unit above it. It had no attic space. So we were like, there's literally no way a human being could be running up there. So he kept hearing footsteps. Well, it started with I was in the shower and I did feel like a really eerie, creepy presence next to me. And I was like, this is kind of weird. It's New Orleans. And then I was like, hey, Hugh. So he like came in. And then I think the lights flickered and we kind of ignored it. And then
a solid ghost signaling out there.
And then
such a cliche ghost.
Yeah. It was so wild. I think the ghost was jealous that Hugh got to come into the bathroom. And then a huge rainstorm happened. There was like knocking on the windows. We went to bed, and then Hugh started hearing these footsteps, and then like felt like he was punched in the throat, moved across the bed. And then what was weird is we were telling our friends, Emma Reeds and John, and Hugh was like, I felt a weird tickling on my wrist, and I hadn't heard him ever say that, and I had felt the same thing during the night. I kept thinking it was just the sheet.
Oh my God.
So creepy. Have you guys had
this
any
is like,
ghosts?
No. It's like poltergeist level.
It was
yeah.
really...
Creepiness.
Oh, so then we messaged the Airbnb, and we were like, has anything like this ever happened? We just wanted to let you know. And all they responded with was nothing that specific. And we were like, okay, so this
definitely.
Place is definitely haunted.
Nothing that specific.
It was a fun adventure, though.
That wasn't part of, like, the listing ad.
No.
I'm like, come, I feel like they could charge more, probably.
Come yeah, get tickled like, in the middle
yeah,
of the night and then
maybe
punched.
Punch in the throat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where in Louisiana was that?
New Orleans.
No, New Orleans.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Anyway, so Jesse is also here. I guess Jesse's been on for a while. I guess I'm, like, the newcomer to this group.
It was nice chatting with Jesse. It was... just like, oh, I'm so comfortable around you guys, so this is going to be fun.
So, like, usually I've been working backwards with whatever people do and try to get to high school because that's usually, like, the most fun part.
Amazing.
We'll see if we get that far.
Okay.
But I actually think of all the guests, you probably do the most of anybody. Like, so many. I have no idea. Like, so many different things. Like Minds, Reads, Human, you just mentioned a magazine. Like, all this crazy shit.
Podcasts.
Podcasts.
Yeah.
Podcasts. So, actually, I would love to hear, what are we, on Tuesday? Mm-hmm. Like, basically what your week
looks like
as of Monday and Tuesday and what the following week will look like just from a purely, like, logistic point of view.
That's a good way to start. So, Mondays are like mine's nights. So I always know between 7 and 9 that Zach, the co-founder of Like Minds, and I will jam out. So
Like Minds is a camp?
Yeah, Like Minds is, Zach will call it a festival, I will call it a conference.
Got it.
And then it's really interesting to hear what other people describe it as. But it's essentially a weekend upstate, usually around the last weekend of August. We've been competing with Sustain and Release for our friend group. But it's anchored and centered around talks or speaker sessions. And then we have really good music. So it starts Friday, speaker sessions all day Saturday, and then we usually go until 1 p.m. on Sunday. And Like Minds started because Zach and I really love getting out of the city and going upstate. And I was asked by a lot of friends and people over time, like, oh, where do I go? Where do I hike? Where do I stay? What do I do? And then I saw a really inspiring conference that I actually got to finally go to called An Interesting Day. It's in Oslo. I actually went with Alan, who we were just talking with. And I thought, okay, what if I could do a non-conference conference in upstate so we could share that love of nature and getting out of the city and inspiration, but, you know, centered around conference programming. So I was telling Jesse earlier, each year has a theme, and that's how we curate all of the speaker sessions. Zach does all of the music. So, yeah, Monday nights, I always know it's
what was the theme of this last year's?
Exchanges. Okay. Which was really interesting because we mapped it to, like, currency, gratitude, conversations. We wanted a sex speaker. We didn't get them. There's always some undercurrent of politics and then always design and tech as well.
Okay. And just to give a sense of what it looks like, when how many people attend and how many speakers you have?
Yeah, we had almost, I think, 14 speakers. We usually have six bands. And then around we had 280. And then I think over 300 this year. Mm. So it's a really beautiful camp. Are you familiar with the Fresh Air Fund? Mm-mm. So the Fresh Air Fund is a not-for-profit. In upstate New York, there's like five camps, and it's for kids that are part of a low income bracket. They can go to summer camp for free, and then they rent these properties in the off season. So that's where we host Like Minds, and I love supporting that cause. And the camp is beautiful. It's Camp Tommy, where we host Like Minds, is the boys' camp, and it's just a bunch of bunk beds, and there's a beautiful lake and a volleyball court. So there's a lot for people to do. We had a drink and draw with a nude model, which was really fun this year. Jesse has been there the last 2 years. We were mm-hmm. chatting. He lovingly said he could see a real difference between last year and year. Mm-hmm. So I think we're honing in on, or at least becoming more confident about our community, and, you know, we'll just keep making it better and better.
Because that already sounds like a person's full-time job to organize, yeah, something like that.
I figure I can do many things in life if I do them with the right people. Right.
And so that's your Monday night?
That's my Monday night, okay. Yep. So I live upstairs, and I have the usually go to One Oliver for coffee, and then our studio is 244 Canal. So usually I'll do like a Monday sprint planning or stand-up for reads just over Slack with Emma, like, here's our divide and conquer kind of delegating lists for the week. But Monday is the busiest day for me human-wise. My old boss and mentor, Emmett, always used to work on Sundays to make his workload and life a lot easier. He would work on Sundays to make his life and workload easier for Monday. And if I don't do that, I now really identify with how crazy Mondays are. So Monday is just cleaning up. Like, I ideally don't like Mondays to be meetings days because I haven't had a chance to really, like, catch up or, mm-hmm. you know what's really going on. But, yeah, Monday is a crazy day. And I always try to remember that it is going to be the craziest day. Like, I don't have to get everything done that day, but it's just my nature to want to get it all done. Mm-hmm. So Tuesday, Thursdays are really good meeting days because, should I give you background on Human?
Please.
So Human NYC started out as a thoughtful development shop for good design. Michael Ray, who was DJing earlier and was speaking, he and I, as many of our friends and associates, started out at Gin Lane together. Mike was on all of my projects. My background's marketing, project management, account management. And my dad was a sheetrocker, and I think I just fell in love with, like, the building portion of projects. And Mike's really empathetic, really detail-oriented, and thoughtful. And we were just like, if we can be that dev shop for all our design friends and their studios, this could be really fun because we could implement their stuff and work on client projects. And what's evolved over the last couple of years is people coming to us for all of the parts of the project. So then we'll pick the right designer.
And you're the kind of like central hub.
Yeah, I try to curate all of our clients, and our we like to say we put the right people on the right projects on the right platforms. So Human was founded in June 2013. And yeah, over the last couple of years, I've really seen us grow more holistically, where we'll work on art direction, content. We've worked with a strategist for the last 2 years. So now we're just basically a full service agency for clients. And what I'm really enjoying is being that thought partner for first time founders or someone that needs us as like almost their business and creative advisor too. And I think what my role can really be is to help clients launch, to say, okay, let's work backwards from our goal here. And like, what do we really need at a minimum to get out the door? So I would say we're not just implementing design. We're really helping a client like launch or scale their business.
So how does that make Tuesday, Thursday is a good meeting day?
Tuesday, Thursday is when we usually, so the way we work with clients is we'll always have a weekly touch base. So that's when I've scheduled a lot of those touch bases. So if we're working on 6 projects, Tuesday, Thursday is kind of like, hey, here's our status, here's some blockers, or maybe it's a presentation or a deliverable. Mm-hmm. So we try to schedule a lot on those days.
And that's primarily, through Human.
Which lends itself to tomorrow, Wednesday is Reads Day. So always from 9 to 11, Emma and I are using that as like high level, bigger vision planning. We used to use it as a working session, but now we use that time as like, are we going down the road that we want to be? How's everything feeling? Where do we want to be in like 1, 3, 5 years? Because it is my first time launching a product and Emma's as well. It's really interesting. I get to be like my own worst client. But we try to be, use that time as more like thinking and jamming out and brainstorming. And then the rest of the day and the rest of the week to just like, you know, finish writing the newsletter or order books or check on packaging or, you know, communicate with next month's curator.
Can you explain Reads?
Sure. So reads.delivery is an online subscription. You sign up and you essentially get a curated package of books every month. And it's generally 2 books. Our method to our madness is one more visual, aesthetically driven, kind of coffee table-esque book, and then one digestible read. And by that, we mean that reads should never feel overwhelming. We don't want our books to just like stack up and people to get really far behind. So we work hard on finding books that can be read in a couple of weekends. So you should feel like really accomplished at the end of the month. And I think when you sign up for Reads, what you're really getting is a community and our curation. So if we've, you know, our first curator, for example, was John Julian, and we're such a fan of him and his work. And to know, just on a personal level, we were like really curious about what 2 books out of all the books he would recommend. So that feeling, I think, is what makes Reads really special, because we have this genuine interest to see our curator's picks for the month. The other interesting thing is with Reads, we're working really hard to get like a pre-release, new release, or something exclusively through Reads. This month we did a custom book jacket with an illustrator, which was really interesting. So working on making the package special, which is hard to sell in a way. Like to describe Reads online or to someone is a bit like, you know, oh, I'm signing up for a book club. Okay, they're going to send me this book. And we've developed Learn Forever and Read Outside of Your Comfort Zone as our 2 like missions or mottos, which you could think, okay, if I want to read outside of my comfort zone, I'll just pick any book. So that level of curation and explanation with Reads, we're still working on. But we've shipped over 8 months, and it's still a blast. So we're
through Reads, you Is there a physical community that you also try to bring together through Reads?
Definitely. We have done, we're doing our third live Q&A session tomorrow night at the Floyd Bed pop-up space. And we've done, I think, 4 or 5 literary dinners. So we'll bring together 30 people, and everyone will get the author's book. And then the author usually does a reading and a Q&A session. And then we did one literary dinner where everyone that came brought something to read, which was really inclusive and really beautiful because, yeah, everyone at the table got a chance to speak, and we randomized the seating so you never knew who was going to speak next. I think Emma and I both are such people that building the community offline comes super natural to us. I think negotiating packaging costs and building a business model and, you know, refining our product and strategizing, those are all things that we have to really work on. But I think bringing people together comes pretty naturally and is something we love doing.
So what do you do with your Fridays?
Fridays, at the studio with Human, we've wanted to use it forever as like cleanup day, fun day, like, I don't know, just a good day. Like if the Like Mind site needs work, or we're working with our friends Talk Mag on their site, and we actually get to be like kind of a thought partner with them and collaborate and jam out. But sometimes Fridays just end up being, you know, a longer Thursday in a way. So
it's like picking up stuff you haven't really fixed.
Yeah, exactly. And I think especially with development, things always take us way longer than we ever hope, account, or imagine that they would. So yeah, Friday's a good cleanup day for us.
Do you ever find that you reach capacity? Because I remember when you were just working at Human, I was like, whoa, Rachel's really busy. And then you took on Like Minds, and I was like, where's she finding that? And yeah. then Reads came on, and I'm just wondering, well, two questions. One is like, is there a point where you have to start saying no to a lot of things? Yeah, well, let's start with that.
I think it would be interesting if we had like, well, Michael and Sasha are here, my partners at Human, and then the rest of the studio. Like if I asked them, am I insane to work with? Like I would love to know what it's like for the other.
You guys can get on the mic to answer that question.
Michael?
The other people I work with. I'm sure.
I think they're just ignoring you, which is me.
Yeah. They are. They're like, whatever. Because I think I'm really candid and open about my working styles. And also Zach, who I work on Like Minds with, he does many other things. So we're well matched in the sense that like we have an infinite appetite for time and we have a lot of energy with what we do. Emma's very thoughtful and very like deep diving. She really has committed to Reads, and she will be the reason like our business really survives. And I think with that, we've just had to communicate and carve out time and set expectations. Mike and Sasha, I feel like I got grandfathered into their lives early on, and we've just stuck together ever since. So, and a lot of the people that we work with in our studio, it's all like a collection of experts coming together to do really good work. So in that way, it's like as long as I'm pulling my weight, you know, and we're all making sure the project's going well, I can be flexible with how many things I do. But I think I am reaching that limit for sure. And I just threw on humansandcomputers.co, our own podcast. So,
in case you have the Fridays where you don't have a lot of stuff to
pick up. I mean, it's a lot of weekends, but I always feel really lucky and happy. So I don't know, I figure if something's naturally meant to fade out, it will. Or
do you have, as someone who in all of your endeavors there's like a creative aspect obviously to it, and you're working with a lot of artists and creative and design people, do you yourself ever need to just, and actually in all your projects you're working with multiple partners, and not only multiple partners but things that extend to a lot of people, like there's always a lot of people around basically. Even on the capacity question, like, do you ever need to just be like, I need a Friday to myself, don't fucking call me?
I don't know. I am never alone. It's kind of odd. I feel really guilty if I'm alone. All of a sudden, if I'm alone, I'm like, oh, I should probably go reach out to so-and-so because I haven't seen them in a little while. Let me go see what they're up to. This weekend, I was alone a little bit. I was like walking around, and that Kilimanjaro trip that I was talking about earlier with Alan and Jesse, that was really neat because you're hiking all day and you're only worried about your basic needs. You're like, okay, don't break an ankle, keep your layers, drink enough water. And then I realized I was getting really inspired and like spiraling out of control in my mind because I had all of this spare time to contemplate and
started like five new things.
I did. I really did. I like wrote down a book of poetry. I like brought back, I've been wanting to do this book, How to Tame a Skater, about like what like skate culture and why those guys are so unattainable. I did.
Is Jessica listening?
Yeah, I was going to say.
I started.
Shout out Jessica.
So I don't think time alone is actually good for me because then I'll just scheme up more stuff.
Do you try to create a clear separation? Like I'm at work right now. I'm not at work. Whether not in terms of a physical place, but for example, just having your phone on you or not.
I've gotten better about if I'm in, I think this was feedback from my dear, our friend Greg Fry, who's a designer that we collaborate with a lot.
What up, Greg?
Like dedicated attention. So if you are in, Dong just made the mimicking beard. Yes, that's just
make sure it's the right Greg.
this dedicated time and attention. So if we're whiteboarding or if we're in a meeting, just really being there. So the last year, I've been really trying to practice that. So I think that helps a lot, like just blocking out my time, which I learned early on at Gin Lane, the founder Emmett, like if it wasn't in the GCal, it wasn't happening. So he used his time really, really wisely. And so you knew you only had an hour and you had to, you know, figure something out and, you know, make some action items and move on. So, yeah, I think being present is something I'll just get better and better at doing. And even with like minds, I noticed when that weekend comes, I'm not on my phone. I'm not questioning myself. I'm just running around. There's so much stuff to do. It's like my favorite weekend of the year, I think, just because I get to be so present all the time. Mm-hmm.
Where did of, let's say, the three endeavors, like Minds, Reads, Human was the first of those three that you got into. Mm-hmm. And was that a direct...
Actually, that's a lie. I have a small editorial.
Of course. I don't know why.
called The Working Pair. And that was the first thing I ever did on my own.
And that's still active?
Still active, yeah. Not as frequently as it used to be, but still definitely active.
What is it?
So it's an online editorial. I'll kill you if you call it a blog. I just think it's so much more than a blog. But it's me interviewing. I'll call them creative couples, but it's really people where individually you could interview them and you'd be really interested by what they're doing and who they are. And then you find out they're a couple and you're like, holy shit, you guys are a power couple.
Couple as in like a romantic couple?
Yeah. So it's either they really support what they do or they're working together in some capacity. And I think it was birthed around 2012 at this time in my life where I had been single since I moved to New York in 2009. And I think there was a real stigma around you should be working so hard that you don't have time for a relationship, and if you have a relationship, you're lame. But then deep down, I was like, that can't be real. Like, I'm a lover of love. Like, good examples of the caliber of relationship I want have to be out there. And I started with Emily and Archie. They were my first working pair interview. And then from them, they recommended Jan from Carlson Wilker and his wife Elizabeth. They recommended Joel and Caroline. Joel, the designer, this is Forrest. So it, organically, every couple just was like, oh, I totally get what you mean. You should interview these guys. Or even now people will email me and just say, oh, I have the perfect person you should interview. So I usually shoot with photographer Meredith Jenks. And I've worked with her now for like 3 or 4 years. So she even will meet people that she's like, we just definitely have to interview them. So that was my first endeavor. And then Human was the second. And Human was birthed out of my taking over the old Playlab beginning space in Greenpoint.
Oh,
they had the gallery.
Yeah.
And it was because I was working pairing Joel, who was a partner at that beginning space with Archie, and I think there was like 7 of them. So I was really, I had a lot of free time, and they were like, this space is really special. Our lease is up. You should look at it. So I looked at it. It had tin ceilings, a storefront, not dissimilar to this space, $1,300 a month. So I started curating shows, printing zines. Then Michael left in Lane, went to Code and Theory. I quickly realized there was no money in art and what I was doing. So I would like Airbnb to afford that place. And then when Michael and I teamed up, we soon after met Sasha. And Sasha's a designer and a developer. So that gave us like even more capability. And I think through Gin Lane referrals and word of mouth, like, you know, even being buddies with Playlab, we slowly were getting referred work. And then our dear friend Rebecca Jo had left Gin Lane, helped to launch Glossy for a year, and then she went freelance. So we just saw our whole community, you know, as this like Ocean's 11 crayon box that we could work with on a per project basis. And we've been doing that ever since.
Yeah, Human still has a kind of rotating roster of people that come in and out. Right?
And I think that's important because when you work with us, it's really about us thinking like, oh, could we work with the right, can we assemble the right team for this? Can we do this project justice from a strategy, design, content, and then dev standpoint?
When you, either Human in the iteration where it was through Beginnings or Human when Michael and Sasha jumped on, had you made a clean cut from Gin Lane to start something new, or was there like a, you were still working at Gin Lane and then trying things on the side?
So I was handling the Adidas by Stella McCartney account at Gin Lane for over 4 years. So when I first left, they were like, oh, could you come back and just manage this one? Because we had grown from like 4 or 5 people when I started to 30, 35 when I left. So we were working, all of a sudden I wasn't just on Adidas by Stella, I was on, you know, 10 other projects as well. So the idea of coming back for just that one was really appealing. But shortly after that, within like a few months, I was like, oh, I can't be 1 foot in, 1 foot out. Like, I just fully want to be focused on my own time and energy. So then it was nice because maybe 6 months to a year after that, we started kind of, we inherited like Saturday Surf, or like, we started getting work from their team that wasn't the right fit for them, so we could fully just do our own work.
What was your first client through Human?
Flower Shop, and she opened up a store on, I think it's Lafayette or Center Street. Amira Kasem, she makes these beautiful cakes for like Wu-Tang Clan's birthday party, and she was really fun. I think the site that we made is still up today. But yeah, we worked with our friend and designer Chris Meisner. And yeah, that was our first one.
Did you always know you wanted to run your own thing, let alone 5 of your own things?
I think so. I remember I wanted to graduate high school early. I wanted to get out of there really early. I was always working like the whole time through high school. I just wanted to like be an adult. And when I was talking to my dad about going to college, I was like, should I be a teacher? He was like, well, you know, everyone's a teacher, don't be a teacher. And I was like, well, should I be like a lawyer? And he was like, people hate lawyers. I don't know if you want to be a lawyer. And I just in my brain was like, well, I want to be a successful business person, and I will like to talk, so maybe I'll go for like PR communications. And then I really didn't like my PR classes, and ended up over in communications and journalism. I think I have a real humanitarian side of me that just loves being around people, so that made sense. But it wasn't until I studied abroad in Italy I took my first marketing classes, and I was like, oh, this makes a ton of sense. I can put the world of visual and communication and people and product all in one. And marketing's really hard to define, and I liked that.
Mm. I mean, I was going to say, when you said you had a marketing and project management background, I don't know if I've ever heard that combination. Because one, in classically, at least to me, one seems so internal and one seems very external. And usually it's like you're either good at one or the other, or you focus on one or the other.
Yeah.
But obviously hearing all of the things you're doing, that actually makes amazing sense. Like that combo is, seems like exact, like you are that as an embodiment, as a person, like those two things together as a, did you, I mean, the, let's say the organizational side of the project management part, is that something you picked up through work, or were you actually studying that?
No, I got my my master's degree is in marketing, and then I fell into project management at GenLane. Mm. So that's where I just spent years, and I'm not good at it. Like, I think
I don't know. I feel like in order, even regardless of how successful or not, because they're all incredibly successful, just to even be able to manage and survive, like literally not kill yourself and actually enjoy your life and actually have time to go hike Kilimanjaro and stuff, I feel like you have to be better than probably 99% of the people that are trying to do it.
That's nice.
A lot to handle.
It's all a matter of prioritizing. And Rebecca and I talk a lot about like making to-do lists, rewriting to-do lists, and then reordering to-do lists. And I think being able to just look at all of the things that get done and then pull out the ones that are most important for that day, that moment, that week, that month is where that comes from. I also think I have a nice applied approach of, hey, there's this deadline, let's work backwards from it, and let's be realistic about it. That's helped over the years, and I'm also okay with failing. So I'm high coping skills. I think that has helped, yeah, prioritize or move things along a bit easier. Not getting stressed out as a PM, I think, is just, I'm grateful for that.
Is that something you've consciously tried to develop as you've, throughout your career, because you are one of the calmest people I think I've met under certain circumstances. For example, at Like Minds, you're like, technically should be super stressed, but you seem like, I remember at the end of Like Minds, we lost the keys to one of the cars and I was like, ooh, like that sucks. Like, we've got this big van sitting there. We have to get off the site and we have to return the van to New York. And you're like, it's cool. I'll just, you know, we'll just drive 3 hours back to New York, get the spare set of keys, then come back tonight.
Call up the locksmith company that
yeah,
I also own.
Yeah. And I was like, whoa, like even I'm stressed right now. Like, is that something that you've consciously kind of been like very, you seem very good at being like quickly making the decision that there's whatever, like 3 ways to approach something and you just kind of pick one rather than sort of seeming to despair too much?
I mean, I know early on thinking digital work is not operating on the brain. Like what we do, no one is dying. Mm-hmm. So that has always helped put things into perspective, like living pretty lightly in the client services realm of like realistically, you know, I don't know. Our work is really important, but sometimes I like to find like a bit of humor somewhere. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It is what it is, or let's, you know, what really can we do about this situation? My dad was like a foreman, so maybe that sense of project management mm-hmm. was in there. I feel like it's built in, and now articulating it is something I just want to keep honing.
Do you have, the foreman analogy is kind of interesting in terms of obviously managing a ton of stuff happening on site, but with a clear goal of obviously, let's say, getting a building built.
Yep.
Do you, with all the different endeavors, is there a singular goal that you're going after, or at the moment is it just pursuing interests as they may arise, or somewhere
in
between?
I think at the heart of everything, I always want to like do right by Michael and Sasha or my team, or I'm a real like family oriented person. So it's always been like, oh, how can I take care of others and myself, and how can we just do good work together? Maybe because I'm not a designer or developer, I can't like build these things on my own and say like, oh, look what I did. Like my whole work is based on other people. So I get to just kind of care and bring that together. And I think that's always my core goal of like, hey, are we all happy? Are we all doing well? Can we all financially still afford to be in this studio together? There's no like longer huge vision. And we've talked openly like, what if Reeds really takes off? Like, does Human fold into that? And Mike and Sasha, like, if it becomes enough of a tech product, sure, you know, we can take it that way. Or just seeing what happens in the future, I think will be really interesting. And I think it's just important to have open conversations along the way, because I don't know how much any of us can really plot or predict or, like, that applied thinking. I can't see myself doing that for like the 10 years and then work backwards. Mm-hmm. I just don't know what will happen.
Is there anybody, like either in your family or even when you were growing up, that was pursuing like a kind of diversified level of entrepreneurship, like always pursuing different things or actually juggling three or four things at once? And I ask that just because like as a generally, certainly myself, but friends I know that are pursuing multiple things, there's always a kind of clear singular priority, and then there's kind of supplementary things. Mm-hmm. But I think what's really interesting is it even how you describe it, I'm sure your time is not evenly obviously spread across all the different things, but it doesn't seem like any one is the core, and then the rest are sort of supplementary. And it's not a model that I've come across very often. And part of it is like, how do you even get to the point where you think that's a possibility? I mean, I guess you just start doing it and then it works.
Yeah.
But I was kind of curious if you had anybody that you knew or didn't. You're like, oh, actually, they're doing a ton of stuff and making it work, and it's all, and they're happy.
Yeah, I think the closest I've heard was we had, do you know Ike Koenig? Mm-hmm. He has a design studio in Berlin called Hort, and he spoke at Like Minds, and he was a little bit like PlayLab in the sense that they, you know, evolved from client services over into an art practice. But he had this whole slide of like his community and all of his collaborators and associates and just this whole realm that makes his world possible. And that was the first time I was like, oh, I'm on that trajectory. Like, I would love to just have a Lego brick world of like these things fitting in at this right time. So that was a recent moment where I felt at home with someone speaking about their work and being able to do many things. Sometimes I get embarrassed because people are like, oh my gosh, you do so many things. And I'm like, oh, is it a bad thing? Is that like the saying of like, if you do 10 things, you're only doing them 10%, so nothing's going well. If anyone does successfully do many things and they want to be an example, holler. Because I think it is hard to find the right example. Both of my grandfathers had their own businesses. One had Jaeger Electric, and then the other had Witherby and Whalen, this like gravestone cemetery memorials business. But those were singular businesses. So I think the entrepreneurial spirit, the no fear, the, you know, okay, if we fail, it's fine. I'll go bartend somewhere. I think that's really built in. I think the modern day gig economy, able to do many things at once, you know, it's around us, but there isn't, I can't think of a really good example that I look at like, oh, that's my North Star.
Have you ever failed?
I had, in a couple of client cases, yes, definitely. There's been, I mean, I've hit my limit where like I've taken on a project for not enough money and then it's gone over. And 2 years ago, there was just one client I was like, I'm sorry, we just can't work on this, and we're not finishing the project. Mm-hmm. And that gutted me, because I'm such a loyalist, and I was like, oh, I signed on to this thing, and now I can't finish it. But I got over it, and I think failing in that sense was good. Pie Stand at Brooklyn Flea, it wasn't a failure, but we only made like $200 a month, and I was like, okay, this isn't going to be one of the seeds that grows into a tree.
Yeah.
So that was an early test of like, what do I want to do in life? Because if you want to be a serious pie baker. We only made one pie, strawberry rhubarb. All of a sudden, a couple of restaurants asked if we would do their desserts, and I saw a real trajectory there, and I knew, okay, that's going to take too much time and work, and I don't have that full passion to do. Any other failures? This would be
like one and a half.
Yeah, that would be a good like Mike and Sasha sort of question.
Minor, pretty minor. Where'd you grow up?
Upstate New York. Yeah. So right outside of the Adirondacks. So about, it would take 6.5-7 hours to drive there from here.
It's not where you do the, near where you do the Like Minds camp.
No, Like Minds is right in the Catskills, so 2 hours away near Beacon. But I'm originally from, I'm basically Canadian, like right on the border of Canada. So a really cold, beautiful, but like kind of blue collar area. It's been interesting to be an adult now and look at the economy and just see how hard it is to really, like I could never be myself there, which is, yeah, interesting to look at.
Do you ever see yourself ending up back there, like moving back there?
I think if I could, my brother had me read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, which is all about passive income. Yeah. So I was like, oh, the only way, it's like thinking about your life in retirement. Like I would have to do something, cash out, and then like go have a house and a lake. But I think I'd like to get to the point where we can take like August and December off or just maybe work remotely more. I think we're going to try to go to Berlin in May and June, but we'll do that as a team. But yeah, as far as upstate, I would love to be able to like be a part of that area, or I've long time like talked, my parents used to have like a motel restaurant when they had first met. That's something I would love to do one day, like be able to be in the hospitality industry. But I don't know about doing that way up in the Adirondacks, because our demographic and community, for them to drive 6.5 hours on a Friday, it's a little far up there, but it's beautiful. It's stunning.
Were you also a kid that did like a million things?
Yes. I was like captain of the lacrosse team and on the yearbook committee and babysitting and then hostessing at a restaurant and then, I don't know, planning a Halloween party and always a part of everything.
Did you have, I mean, when you, actually one question I have is when you were at Gin Lane, what prompted you that you felt like you needed to start kind of eventually take yourself out of the company and start your own thing?
I remember thinking, I don't know the path here. Like now I would look back and be like, oh, you seriously sit the founders down and ask them to be a partner. You talk to them about how you grow here. And because you were here at the beginning, you carve out a spot and you grow the future. But I didn't know that. So I kind of took myself out of it because I felt like we were in a really stable place. When I left, we were just growing really, really well. And I almost felt like not needed in a way. Like we could hire in management and we now had so much knowledge about how things needed to work. And it was just this wonderful opportunity for me to go and get uncomfortable on my own. And Emmett, the founder, was so supportive of that. It was like, if you love something, set them free in a way. And I wasn't sure what I was going to do, but I think I also, watching him grow Gin Lane on his own for so many years, instilled in me, hey, maybe I could do this someday. Like, I'm watching him balance the checkbook or dust the bookshelves or, like, you know, just be a jack of all trades and really grow this thing. So that was always very inspiring. I didn't know, like, I started curating shows or printing zines. I wasn't sure if it would be digital, but I'm glad it was. Yeah.
That you'd mentioned that kind of be uncomfortable on your own. I guess it was sort of the question of like, was it a desire to be uncomfortable, or was it like, I can handle the discomfort that comes with starting something new? It was kind of like, you know, one of the questions like, what prompted you instead of moving to a different company that had a position for you or had a need for you, let's say, as opposed to that discomfort of starting something on your own?
It was definitely, and is still is, I can handle this. I can do this. I want to go build whatever it is on my own. Mm. And just really being up for that challenge. And it's so satisfying at the end and start of every day to be like, no matter what happens, it was your decision for better or for worse. And that is still so motivating.
Do you find yourself feeling less stressed or more, more relaxed or less relaxed when you started your own thing? When you moved from Gin Lane to then start your own thing? Like, I'm wondering if there was a sense of freedom that was enough to kind of make you feel weirdly relaxed, even though you were probably doing more work.
I don't know. I think I felt the same. I was always really happy. The roles were very similar. I think I now identify with some of the things I used to have to do as a job, but now I have to do them because they're mine. I understand them more. Like even like scoping with clients or I don't know. There's just some things where I have a little bit more attention to detail, or they mean a lot more because they're mine. It's largely a lot of the same stuff. It's putting projects together and bringing on the right people and seeing things through and, you know, making things successful for you and your client.
Can you talk about, and mostly because you're getting interviewed by two guys, that just being an entrepreneur, let alone like a multi-entrepreneur as a woman, because the percentages are obviously still pretty off balance. Has that side of you played a part in, I think, in pushing for new things, kind of being, because I think that confidence of starting something is impressive regardless. And I was curious if you also had models that were like, oh, here's a lineup of women that are actually pushing for things. I can be like them, or you just, I can do this.
It's so interesting you ask that. My friend runs this Subway Book Review, and she like photographs people with their books on the subway. So she had asked me to like bring my book and be photographed. So I brought the E-Myth, which is about how the engineer, the manager, and the entrepreneur can't all be the same people. And it was, so she asked me about it, and I said, oh, you know, my friend John, his dad gave this to me. And then she was asking about my mentors and my background, and I said, you know, my mentor and old boss Emmett, and then, you know, maybe Craig, this entrepreneur and client, and then my dad and both of my grandfathers. So she said, oh, don't you think it's, you know, a little strange that everyone you emulate and are your mentors are men? And I was like, I have never thought of that in my whole life. Like, I grew up in a really fortunate bubble of existence where I just didn't see the differences for men and women. I just, you know, my dad would like teach me how to punch. My brother and I were treated the entire same, like always equal opportunities at school. I had such a great group of guy friends that were like, let's go throw pine cones at cars or get drunk or try to jump on this train. And I was just had this really supportive upbringing. And then when I started my career, I also, you know, had all colleagues that were guys and women. I remember reading this one article called Shine Theory in New York Mag, and I remember emailing it to Rebecca and maybe someone else at the office, and it was all about like stopping female competition. And I was like, hey, I think this article is really important because I, you know, you do encounter other women in your career time where it's like, wait, are you like, oh, this is cattiness, or this, why aren't we working well together? Mm-hmm. So I think that as a woman, there's a real opportunity to bring each other up. But I think your question's so interesting because I really haven't noticed until Trump got elected how lucky I was, how I've never been a victim of sexual assault, how I've never been in like a really sexist position. I've only ever felt supported. So I just always looked at society as this like place of people, And men can also be like, male and female, you can be an asshole. So I just have always been like, oh, it's this person, not so much their gender. Now that I'm a bit further along and looking at our political climate and all that's come out, I think it is really important to be a mentor if I can, or be a beacon of strength for anyone that may need it. I have felt really fortunate recently, but there were no women that I really, I interned for my aunt who had a production company, or still has a production company in DC, and she, you know, is a boss just as I want to be a boss. So I think that was a good example, but she's not really vocal and she's not really outgoing, and it wasn't easy to get close to her. But I think that's it's a good question. It's a good point, and I would love to see more women in roles that I can look up to or be that someday for someone.
It's amazing to hear someone like you must have even gotten clients who had stereotyping or sort of treated you differently than if you were a male boss.
I wonder though if that person is just annoying. Like I did have one client like make a fist on his head, and he was like, I want a mobile site and a desktop site. And I was explaining to him that they're not two separate sites. Like we develop things responsively. It's essentially, it's one site. Like if you want to be able to edit an asset, we can make that one editable different for mobile. But it just seemed like he was picking like beef with me and not listening in a way. And I was like, is this tantrum a result? I did have the moment of like, is this just you, or is it because I'm a woman, or what is this hairy situation? But yeah, luckily our community, we get all of our business via word of mouth, and our network and community is full of, I would say, just really wonderful people that are focused on doing really good work. So a lot of people that come our way are just, you know, like-minded individuals and really respectful and in it for the work or the product, or, you know, they're just looking for like brand expertise and development expertise. And it's not about, there's not this like, I don't see as much of it, I guess. Mm. But I do feel like that's, I live in a bubble, you know.
But I can imagine it's like, even if it's not a conscious, conscious decision of working with people that are on that same wavelength. Mm. I'm sure it's just intuition whether those people seem like good people or not, and you kind of decide to work with them. But it's interesting, I was thinking as you were saying that, like, is there a way to bring that model, as dumb as a model sounds, just like, look, only work with people that are
respectful,
not dicks.
Yeah.
Like that's a pretty, but is there a way to almost bring that as a model into areas where there are a lot of dicks? Like, could you sort of start, and I don't know how you would do that, but it'd be interesting to see that kind of run up against worlds where there is a lot of misogyny, that there is a lot of kind of just like backwards thinking, and is there a way to actually use that simple model of like, look, the people I work with are wonderful. Here's how we do all these different things.
Or because I work in such a small community, it would be interesting, to your point, in like larger companies and corporations and businesses where people don't feel like I'm in the position to say, we're not going to work with this person. They are not a good vibe. Mm-hmm. But if you're not in the position to make that call, making it easier in some sense to recognize that or vocalize, like, I really don't want to work with this person. They don't treat me well or with respect, or
I must feel like if someone's like ready to hire someone, first meet Rachel and see if she like gives you a sign off.
Be like, all right, let me evaluate this person.
It's just a
lot of gut intuition with people, and I don't mind like judging quite quickly in that sense too.
Well, shout out to all your friends.
I know you guys. This is the kind of vibe.
Do you think it's have you had a lot of friends that have come out of work, or has work come out of a lot of friends? Like, were you previously friends with people that you then started working with? Or
yeah, both. Way? That's a great question. My entire Gin Lane network just like folded into being family and then also colleagues. So that jump off, that springboard, I have no idea like where I would be or what I would be doing. You know, maybe I could have seen myself. I at one time was like, maybe I'll try to go work at the UN or like be this larger person. But I just fell into such a beautiful community of people. Mm-hmm. And I've been in their weddings and we share a studio. There's like 12 of us in our studio now that decide to collaborate with each other every day. So it's you can't leave something like that.
Mm-hmm. As a kind of round out question, something we actually have asked almost everybody is how you made your first dollar. And I'm especially curious because now you've made your dollars in so many different ways. Do you remember, like, as a kid where your first dollar came from?
I remember. So my dad, like I said, was a sheetrocker, and he did a lot of, like, manual labor. And I remember I used to get paid a dollar as a little kid to walk on his back.
What I love is, like, I was as I was asking that question, I was like, literally every endeavor you've done or that you've mentioned anyway, is because we obviously a lot of people on the show are artists or creative people in some way. And so a lot of it's about like, how do you pursue your own dream and the kind of thing you want to create? And I think one of the big differences with what you do is everything you do is in support of someone else.
Right.
Like whether that's their brand or their ideas getting it on like minds or in this case, supporting your dad's back. Like it's from day
small
one.
Small foot it's amazing. Yeah. But then babysitting. Then I worked in a hardware store, and then, yeah, restaurant jobs. Shout out to Ace Hardware.
Yeah.
I spent years there.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Rachel.
No, thank you guys for having me.